Welcome to Phantasms Flee the Deadly Cthulhu. That's what this season is called. I don't know if I'm going to change the name of the podcast or not, and I don't care. I have with me here some very important people. Let's quickly go through who we have here. Please say words when I say your name. We have Bees.
Words.
Frit. Off to a great start. All right. Frit.
Yes. I'm speaking words. What more do you want from me?
You didn't say anything until just now.
You're so quiet.
No words.
Oh, I said hi.
No, you did not.
Kyle.
Hello.
Ram.
Hi.
Lights.
Hello.
The surprise may have been spoiled because you just heard someone talk and you might not recognize, assuming you can tell our voices apart at all. Charlie.
Hello.
And Archimedes.
Hello.
We're going to be calling her Cheese most of the time because it's bad.
Our brains are broken.
My friends don't respect my proper nouns.
We have a lot of ground to cover. This is a game that has... Oh, my thing that I wrote here says that it's a game that has 8 people, but it actually has 7. One of our other new players had to drop out, unfortunately. But they will be back someday, I'm sure, and you're probably going
to
love
them. And another one was lost to the sands of time.
Another one was lost to the sands of time. They might be back if we can pull them out of the sands of time. Hello, come in, have a seat. Make yourself comfortable. How rude of me to forget to introduce myself. My name is Gosts, but don't be fooled. I'm not the Gosts that you just heard in the recording. I'm future Gosts. You see, in this podcast, we have little Game Master notes, which I will insert. When you hear a doorbell and the sound of a door welcoming you into my humble abode, that means that time has been paused. I have stopped the game so that I can tell you something important, like my name. Although, actually, there's some other things I wanted to tell you. This was supposed to be the second part of this season. We actually played another game of Call of Cthulhu before this. Unfortunately, the audio got really trashed. These kinds of things can happen, especially when you take a break from recording for half a year and then try to do it again. In that game, I was planning on introducing a bunch of the new players by having them play with just Bees in a scenario that I'd already run, but that Bees had missed. It was a nice introductory game, and it's a shame that we lost it, especially because it introduced those other two people. I'm sure that I'll be able to squeeze them into a game someday in the future. This is quite a few people to have in one game of Call of Cthulhu or one game of anything, but I thought it would be fun to just have a big old party. Anyways, speaking of big old parties, for now, I'd like you to get out of my house and get back to listening to the podcast. Goodbye. New people? Why are there new people in this podcast? It's because I know more than 5 people, but you can't really inject people into the middle of a 3-year-long paranoia campaign. So there's new people, and I'm probably going to try to make sure that we don't have like all 9 or 10 or however many people I can get into a game at once most of the time, because that's a nightmare and I have to go through things quite quickly. And let's begin. There's a lot of rules. What? Yeah, you can talk. What, would you like to
say? I said, who's ready to play cock?
Oh, yes. Okay. Who's ready? I thought you said, can I talk?
No.
Who's ready to play cock? Well, our audience might not know how to play this game. That's okay. I can probably fill them in with a little notice. Ha ha, hello. Don't worry, I don't normally interrupt quite this much, only when it is important. And what is important is knowing how to play Call of Cthulhu. Unless you already know how to play Call of Cthulhu, or you don't care and you just want to listen to us and figure it out as we go. This is acceptable, and if one of those two things applies to you, then you should skip ahead to... It's looking like it's going to be about 13 minutes 15 seconds is when the actual gameplay begins. Anyways, if you're not skipping ahead, I'm going to assume that you would like to know the basics of the game. If you don't want to, but you can't skip ahead because you're driving, for example, and you can't touch your phone, I pity you. Hey, don't do that. Don't get into a fucking traffic accident on my account, jackass. Now, pretty much everything in this game, or at least this edition of the game, goes from 1 to 100. All of your attributes, like your strength and dexterity constitution, go from 1 to 100, as do all of your skills. Most of the dice that you roll are going to be the 2d10s, which give you a result from 1 to 100. Well, actually, I guess you would say that the stats in this game go from 0 to 99, and the dice go from 1 to 100, but that gets complicated. We'll get into that later. There are some other attributes that you should know about. There's size, which is sort of a mix between your strength, constitution, and general robustness. It increases your health, and it increases your melee damage. But if your strength or dexterity are lower than your size, that makes you a slower character in terms of movement speed. And you don't need to be faster than your friends. No, you don't need to be faster than the... You don't need to be faster than the bear, you just need to be faster than your friends. Yeah, that's how it is. Anyways, intelligence in this game is really more like wisdom in other games. It's your general reasoning ability. And this game's intelligence is called education, which is how much you've learned in academic forms, basically. We also have power, which is sort of your, it's the magical part of charisma in D&D. It's your psychological strength, and it contributes to your magic points. It helps you resist certain mental effects that might harm you. Most characters in Call of Cthulhu don't know any magic, especially not player characters. They may learn some as the game goes on, but at the start, your magic points are not particularly useful, although they can come into play. For example, there are a lot of effects which will drain your magic points and then your hit points. If you're hit by one of those, even if you are in a game where there's no options for you to learn magic at all, your MP might be a good barrier to keep you alive. In older editions of the game, having no magic points would render you unconscious, sort of like a mental exhaustion, but that has been changed, and instead you will just continue to rot until you die. There's a lot of little changes, and this is our first time playing 7th edition, so we may make a couple of mistakes because most of us are more used to other versions of the game. But I like this version so far. I haven't gotten a chance to read the entire 500-page book, just the sections that I needed to refresh myself on. There's also your luck, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's the odds of, I don't know, is there something that you can use as an improvised weapon? I don't know, did you leave the door to your car locked or unlocked? Anytime you're trying to figure out something like that, you can roll it. And there's also your sanity. Your starting sanity is based on your starting power. You have to roll sanity in order to resist losing sanity, so the lower you go, the easier it is to keep slipping. As your sanity goes down further and faster, you may start to get temporary effects that make your character harder to play for various reasons. And if your sanity becomes zero, then your character is permanently insane, which is a game over for you in almost all circumstances. Now, there's a lot of skills in this game, and I can't cover all of them, but I do want to talk about a couple. For example, there's a special credit rating, which is your wealth, summed up in a sort of a single stat. Then there is the Cthulhu Mythos skill. The Cthulhu Mythos skill is your knowledge of Eldritch and otherworldly things, dark secrets that humanity's not meant to know, etc., etc. Now, reaching 100 in Cthulhu Mythos doesn't mean that you've mastered the entire universe. Similarly, reaching 100 in the jump skill doesn't mean that you can jump anywhere in the universe. It means that you've reached the human potential, the maximum that a person can have. Therefore, having 99 Cthulhu Mythos means that you know as much about the mythos as any human ever will. What does that do for you? That lets you roll to identify creatures, or whether or not a spell is being cast, or what spell it is, or even what you can do to counter that spell, or save yourself from some kind of horrible entity. Ghosts, ghouls, vampires, werewolves, and other things that are remarkably less sexually attractive to most people. However, your maximum sanity is equal to 99 minus your Cthulhu Mythos. So as that skill approaches maximum, your sanity approaches minimum. Now, there's all kinds of rules about damage calculation and guns and hit points and when you're injured, but we're not going to go into those yet. For now, let us continue the game. Get out of my house. Unlike paranoia, I will not be telling you the end of the mystery really early, because that's kind of not fun for Call of Cthulhu. I think you'll probably want to be figuring it out as you go yourselves. Anything else? Any other questions about game rules that I might have forgotten to explain? Anything I should say?
Spellbooks, if that's relevant?
There are a lot of rules about spellbooks. I would love to go over them. I will probably go over them later, if or when you find a spellbook.
Hey, how do you make a successful dice roll?
Well, good question. In this game, we roll 1d100, and you have to get under whatever your skill is. There's also different levels of success. You can roll under half of your skill, that's called a hard success, or under one-fifth of your skill, that's called an extreme success. Sometimes this matters, sometimes this does not matter. Usually it matters on some level. Now, let us get to the scenario. You all know why you're here and what you're doing, of course, but the audience doesn't, so I'm just going to quickly skim through this. There are two groups here, because we have so many players. One group is going to start, and then we'll switch to the other, and then we'll switch back and forth. The first group is the partygoers. The partygoers are good friends of either Philip Anderson, the writer and collector of historical items, or his nephew, Raymond Anderson, an entrepreneur who has finally convinced his uncle to sell off a good portion of his collection. The profit has been, apparently, quite tremendous, and Philip may not have to write another book for the rest of his life. Since they're newly loaded, they've decided to host a small gathering for the weekend. Both of them have invited a few guests to their home just outside of Mount Pleasant in South Carolina. The group will be staying over, and there will be food, drinks, a brand new radio, and of course plenty to see and do around town while you are there. The university students, we will get to later, because they're going second. Now, partygoers, please introduce yourselves and your characters very briefly. Let's see, which starts with Cheese, Archimedes.
Today I'm playing Stella Ross. She's a singer from Birmingham, Alabama, and she met the younger of the party-throwing couple. I can't quite remember his name.
Couple?
Well, oh,
no,
boy.
No, the two, the son and dad. She met the son at a party that she was invited to. He was also there, and they talked to each other, and, you know.
All right. Next up, Bees, you're also a partygoer, aren't you?
Yep. I am playing Posey Parker. She is a... she's actually also a university student, but unrelated to the other university students. She goes to school in Charleston. And her father is a man of some amount of influence, and he happens to know Philip. And he has, you know, kind of sent her for schmoozing reasons.
Let's see. And I'm sorry, I forgot which one of you is which.
It's Ram.
Oh, that's right. Hello, I'm Ramy, and I will be playing Samuel Earle. He is an antiquarian who has worked with Philip Anderson in the past, identifying and procuring relics and advising Philip on whether or not to purchase those relics for his collection. So this is kind of a real feather in his cap for this relationship, just the successful sale of those relics going forward. This is really Samuel Earle's big day.
Wonderful. All right. So we have our three partygoers. Our other characters will be introduced in just a little bit. For now, let's go ahead and get started. How are the three of you arriving? Do you all have vehicles? Calling a cab, perhaps, if not?
Well, my driver is driving me to the party, obviously.
Ah, a driver. We're that level of economic freedom, as they say.
I'm driving myself to the party.
Suppose you'd take a cab.
All right. Let's see. So you arrive at the building as specified. Some of you, I think, already know where it is based on your backstories, and some of you probably don't. The Anderson household. It's sort of, it's not quite outside of town, but it's near the edge. It's got a big yard. The landscape here is sort of near a swampy area, so it's not, it's pretty, but it's also a little gross, you know? It's nature. We love the nature. You all arrive, you know, a few minutes apart, but for the sake of time, we're just going to all jam you into the door. So you knock on the front, probably, something like that?
Sure. What time is it?
What time is it? That is a really good question. Let's say it's 1 p.m.
Then, of course, knocking on the door.
You knock on the door. The younger, you know, was like 29 or something, Raymond Anderson opens the door and says, "Ah, hello, our guests. I'm so glad that you could come here. He ushers you all inside.
Thank you so much for inviting us.
Thank you, Raymond. What a splendid occasion.
He nods eagerly and brings you inside. You see that there's a wonderful little snack table, and Raymond says, "I've been trying to convince my uncle that we should do some fun things, although he has his own ideas that are quite interesting, but I'm sure that we can all work something out. I can take your coats. We can hang them up over here. You know, we were thinking of hiring maybe some people to help out around the house, but we haven't gotten to that yet. So I apologize if there's, I know that you, for example," and he gestures to the people with vast quantities of money, "might be more used to that sort of thing, but we haven't had that until recently."
"Of course, I can carry my own things in to the room, and I'd be willing to help anyone else if they need help."
"Oh, yes, good. Yes. We can unload your cars in just a moment if you want." And then suddenly this slightly older man, maybe 48 or something like that, busts in. His hair is pretty gray. He looks quite old, honestly, even though he's not super old. He's wearing a hat. He looks like he's ready to go outside. He's wheeling a big wooden thing with a bunch of pieces attached to it, and he says, "All right, croquet."
"Mr. Anderson," I rush up to shake his hand.
"Oh, hello. I'm so glad that you could come. I'm so glad I know most of you. I'm afraid I don't know you," he says, and points to Stella, because I believe you met his nephew, and you haven't actually met him yet.
Stella has taken her coat off and handed it off to Raymond, and she addresses, I can't remember what the dad's name is.
"Okay, Philip."
And says, "Stella Ross, at your pleasure."
"Stella, lovely to meet you," he shakes her hand.
She shakes his hand back as well. She looks a little bit flustered, but she's...
"Do you play croquet?"
"Well, I can't say I have, but I would be delighted."
"Why?"
She's just confused by the question.
"That's all right. I think that everyone should play it, and I finally have the time to do it, and we finally have the people to do it. Thank you all for coming."
And, I also have a question.
"Yes, what's up?"
"Is he normally like this?"
"Why are you like this?"
"Is he normally like this?"
Vibe check.
Vibe check.
I kill him. He's clearly a Cthulhu.
"Is he normally this?"
There's a couple things that he gets really into. History.
Oh, yeah.
And croquet. And sometimes cocaine.
Ooh. I love cocaine.
It's always easier to make a sale with the cocaine.
He does love to play croquet.
That's what he writes about, right? History?
History, yes. He is a author of various historical accounts, you know, talking to people. There's not a lot of people at this point who have not been interviewed by him if they have any historical context for historical events. He has traveled all over the country to interview anybody who was there at the time for anything like that, you know. And that doesn't leave a lot of time for croquet, but now it does, as he has said. So Raymond says, "Well, Uncle, I was thinking perhaps we could just, you know, unload from people's cars and maybe get them settled into their rooms and then come down and just have some of this lovely food that we have prepared." And he says, "Ah, but the food can wait, and so can the luggage. But there's only so many hours of daylight where you can play croquet properly."
"Oh, sir, I took a cab here. It would really be beneficial if I unloaded my luggage now."
He starts to stick his tongue out, and he bites it, and he says, "That's reasonable. Let's get your things to your rooms, then. We will do that." He seems like he's ready to help you guys carry stuff, but he probably shouldn't be doing that.
"Oh, it's all right. Don't worry yourself. I'll ask my driver to bring my things in. It's okay."
"No, Philip, let's set up the croquet and while they get their things in, and I'll bring my things in later."
"Ah, but you see, we can't set up the croquet," he says, and he has a big smile, "because my yard is absolute dog shit for croquet. It's mucky, the swamp water has completely ruined it, and someday perhaps I will spend a large quantity of money having it redone, perhaps putting up some kind of weather-preventing barrier so I can play croquet here. But There's one place in town perfect for croquet. And Raymond is putting his hand in on his head. Just kind of, he's not happy about this.
I've been side-eyeing Raymond as this conversation has been going
on.
How
old are they both? Like, respectively? Also, is Raymond a cutie?
Is he a cutie? He's got, like, medium-length blonde hair, and he looks nice, but he's also kind of greasy. I believe I mentioned that Raymond is 29 and Philip is 48 or something like that. And
he's clarifying the important stuff early.
Philip says, "The graveyard! They can't afford to let that ground get messed up.
Philip!
It's wonderfully flat.
Philip, we can't be playing croquet
Stella
in a graveyard."
Stella is extremely entertained. Usually parties are like music and dancing and stuff, and now this
definitely
is
can play croquet in the graveyard.
Is this my first time playing croquet in a graveyard?
Yes. You don't need to make a luck check for that.
Okay, thank God.
Are you certain we're allowed to do that? To play
yes,
croquet
he said.
In a graveyard?
Raymond says no.
All right, how far away is this graveyard?
Oh, it's 10 minutes drive. Just a little bit of ways out of town. It's
why that's not so far at all.
Sparsely populated with people, except for dead ones, you know. But people don't usually come there. Nobody's going to notice. It's just a little croquet.
A little croquet.
All right. So, you guys unload your things. You convince Philip not to strain himself doing so. He just stands around and has a few snacks off the table. Philip is quite insistent about this croquet business. Is everyone on board? Just to be clear.
Just gonna go to sidle to Raymond and be like, Raymond, how did he get the idea to play croquet in a graveyard? Was he just scouting out the area?
Yes.
Looking for... Oh my god. Good lord.
Anyways, I didn't hear any no's, so pretty much like 25 minutes after you arrive, you have arrived at the graveyard instead. Which is, as he said, it's large, it's flat. There are gravestones. But he doesn't seem bothered by that. There are some lovely willow trees. There's a little iron fence around it, but there's just like an open gate for people to walk in, you know. There's not even a door on it that could be locked. So you all just walk in.
Could I roll like a spot hidden to see if there's some like family visiting their loved ones before we start cranking out the croquet balls?
Sure, yeah, you can make a spot hidden. See if there's anyone around.
Can we all?
Oh, shit.
Wow, that's a 7.
That's
on a
100. Never what mind.
That is an extreme success.
An extreme success. Well, you can all roll, but I don't think there's any need to. There actually is, you see one person. They look like they are, you're not quite sure. They're kind of walking around next to some headstones over on the far side, but they're quite far away from you. You don't think that they would probably even really see what you're doing other than hanging out on the other side of the graveyard. So I don't think that's too much of a problem.
Okay.
Unless you do think that's too much of a problem. I'm not sure.
I guess I'll mention to Philip. I'm like, Philip, there's actually someone here.
Philip says, oh, we'll be a little quieter then, not to disturb them.
Yes. Okay.
He turns and he says, everyone knows the rules, right?
Oh God.
And he introduces you. Well, I don't know. If you haven't played it before, probably not, but he's going to introduce you all. He sets up a bunch of little wickets, and you have to hit balls through them. Eventually, as he's just like getting the balls on the ground and getting people ready and saying, "All right, this you're this color, you're that color," you hear that person that you saw earlier. Suddenly, they're making a lot of noise. I want you to make a psychology roll. Everyone's free to.
Holy hell.
Oh my god, I threw points into this as a joke.
No.
Damn!
Big yay.
His brain explodes.
Did you pass yours?
He just thinks he's breathing,
yeah,
I guess.
14.
Well, just be glad that you're getting your 100. You're getting the worst roll in the game out before it matters. You hear this. It sounds like an old woman is crying. Stella, this is the fakest crying you've ever heard, but everyone else is totally convinced. But she's going, ooh, hoo, 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 ooh, hoo, 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 hoo. What do you want to do about this?
I mean, it's a bit strange, but...
A bit weird? You want to just keep playing croquet?
Yeah, I mean, I just kind of turn to the others quietly. I'm not going to say anything. I don't say anything to anyone else. I'm just kind of like looking
at her. I was getting ready
to
defend that woman with my fucking last breath.
No, I'll just say, well, that's a bit strange, but,
I mean, she's crying at a graveyard. I don't think that's very strange.
Raymond is kind of like tugging at his collar nervously. Philip does not give a shit, does not give a singular shit. It sounds like we're just continuing the game.
How physically far away from us is this lady?
I was gonna ask, has she gotten closer?
Well, she's more than 100 feet, I would say. She's pretty far, you know, she's not near you. So you hit the balls a couple times. You got to hit them through the wickets, and I think you get more hits if you get them through the wickets. It's been a while since I played croquet.
You played croquet?
And yeah, it's great. You hit each other's balls, and that's the best part, because then you get to hit your ball while it's up against theirs, and like you can put your shoe on your ball and transfer the force through your fucking ball into theirs and just send it to the fucking moon.
I've seen Heathers.
I will. I'm playing this, but I am trying to speed the game along. I'm helping people because I'm like, this is so awkward.
Anyways, you notice that this woman has gotten like way closer, and she's crying like way louder. Like she's obviously trying to get your attention.
Is she crying like at a specific grave, or is she just like?
Well, she was, but now she's just crying like in the middle. I guess she moved over.
That's some banshee shit.
Well, I think she's mourning. I feel like I need to go help her. Right.
Okay, yeah, go help her.
Yeah, I'm going to maybe help my good friend Philip undo this croquet game before this woman comes over and sees what we're doing.
Don't move the wickets. What are you doing?
She's going to see. All right,
you're arguing about that, Bees. You go up and you talk to her. She is messed up. Like, her clothes look really weird and bad, and, like, she is like, old.
Dirty, or is she just like that upset that she's disheveled?
You can't tell. She looks like she's been through like a few hurricanes or something. You don't know how someone gets into this state of disrepair with their body and possessions.
Been beat up by some ghosts.
Excuse me, ma'am, are you okay?
Oh, thank you for coming over. My husband had died recently, and all he left me was this strange book.
And she hands you a weird book immediately. She just pushes it at you and says,
Eddie said it was valuable, but I can't read it.
Sus.
I look at the book. Sus. Is there a title on it?
There's no title. This is a pretty decently sized leather-bound tome. At least you think it's leather. There's kind of a bunch of different, like, colors on the tome, and you're not sure if that's normal. There's, like, some yellow and some, like, blue kind of over a leathery texture.
I'm so sorry, are you illiterate?
No, I'm not illiterate, she says.
The book's in Arabic, this is so bad.
The front of the book has a metal piece fixed on it, a little metal circle, and inside that there's like a little glass dome, like a little glass half circle, and inside that there's what looks like a little marble or something, little eye that's got three irises in a triangle on it.
I'm so sorry to hear about your husband. How did he pass?
Could you read it for me?
Jesus.
Well, oh, of course, God. I'm gonna read the book for this lady. I pop it open.
You pop it open, and the first page is blank, and the second has some weird symbols on it, and the third has a lot of weird symbols on it. They're all just like circles with a single line through them, but at different positions. And you're like, this isn't even like symbols that you recognize as text, but you feel like you could probably read it, and you're not sure why you feel that way.
So does it translate in my head, or do I need to speak loud?
No, neither. You're just looking at it, and it doesn't make sense, but you feel like you probably could make sense of it if you took a minute or two. Do you want to try that, or do you want to just, you know, say you can't?
Yeah, sure. Let me see if I can understand it.
All right. She says,
well, there's no great hurry. Maybe you could see if any of your friends know the language as well.
Gust.
I'm not sure they do.
I'm going to quit this game if this is the plot of I Am Mean. Just a heads up.
See them study. Watch them study.
Do you acquiesce to her request, Bees? Or are you going to...
I'm I said that I'm not sure they do speak the language, but I will try to read it, because I believe that she's grieving, and I'm so sorry.
All right, let's see. You take a couple minutes, and she's sort of looking at you and looking at everyone else, and Ram and Cheese, are you doing anything other than trying to stop croquet or trying to finish croquet as fast as possible?
I'm playing croquet.
All right.
I'm trying to stop croquet.
How far are we away from them? Can they hear this? Can they hear the exchange?
Absolutely.
When this woman is forcing me to read a book?
He is super loud.
Stella's keeping an ear on it in the meantime, because Stella knows this lady's bacon is up to something. Like, the book's probably going to ask her to buy gift cards or some shit.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I guess if we're both like kind of like still doing stuff around there, I might mention to like people playing. Like, she sounds like she's having a really rough time.
Do you want to read that first page that just had a few symbols, or do you want to like just do the first page, or do you want to just like flip through? What do you want to do? It's up to you.
I want to look at the first page, see if I can figure out like a title or something. Like, normally there's like an author and title.
You concentrate on it for a while, and you're pretty sure that these are some kind of letters, and you think that it says, "The ill-fitting cloth which was discarded," and you're not sure exactly how you know that, but you're pretty sure that's what it says.
I think this says, "The ill-fitting clock which was discarded." Was
that's
your husband
wonderful.
A clockmaker?
Do you cloth, actually, not clock, but
cloth.
She says,
oh, sorry.
That's so wonderful. Do you think you could show it to your friends now?
Why?
Alright, let's see here. Let me check something.
She's gonna grow like 30 heads in real combat.
I mean, I'm so scared that I'm gonna die from this, but I think she's grieving, you know? Like, what do you do when an old lady is crying hysterically? You read her book to her.
You hear somebody, you hear a voice say, "God damn!" And a guy walks out from behind a tree and he says, "Josephine, you are the worst at this. You are absolutely miserable."
Excuse me, who are you?
This guy just pulls out a .45 and aims it at you and says, "Just show the book to your friends, all right?"
Help?
"We are extremely reasonable people. We need you to look at this book just for like 10 minutes, all right?" So you guys have probably noticed that there's a guy with a gun who's trying to get you to look at this book over on the other side now. What would you like to do?
Well, I mean, I have to intervene, right?
Probably, like, yeah.
I just want to throw out there how quickly this situation went from 0 to 100.
I'm like, what is the meaning of
zero?
I'm walking up.
This was at least a 5.
Approaching the woman,
holding
my hands
in the
air.
Right.
What is the meaning of this?
Beast, are you holding your hands in the air?
No, I'm holding
the book.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Drop the book.
Cheese, what about you?
Well, I'm no longer playing cricket. He has my full
You never
attention.
Were playing cricket.
Not cricket. Croquet.
Hit the croquet ball I had.
You know what I meant.
Oh, yeah. Into him.
Raymond does not have the strength nor the accuracy required to hit a man with a fucking
croquet
ball.
That would be so fucking sick if you did, though. Raymond and Philip are both putting their hands in the air, and Philip says, "It's just croquet. It's not hurting anyone." Meanwhile, the guy with the gun says, "Just stand there for like 5 seconds. Josephine, show him the damn book. God, this is so stupid." And the old lady just kind of takes the book back, if that's all right, Bees.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's
kind of the book.
She goes up to all the rest of you and just starts flipping through the pages really fast and sort of like shoving them in your face and being really weird.
I think it's poison. I'm like kind of like recoiling from it. Like, what is this horrible? Like, what's happening?
You can
here?
Recoil from it. Are you refusing to even look at it, or are you?
I'm just asking. What is the meaning of this?
She,
how do
she
you
doesn't say anything, but
any
she suddenly looks very happy.
Can
and
I roll my
she,
literary skill on this book?
You like, can, but first, we're going to cut to the students.
Ah, yes.
Crazy. At this point, I'd like to tell you a little bit about how I constructed this scenario. Specifically, I want to talk about three core concepts, which I'm going to identify as hooks, freedom, and being smug. You probably already know what a hook is. It's something that makes the audience want to participate in the story. Mysterious murders are hooks, missing princess is a hook, even a famine or a plague could be a hook. Pretty much any event that entices some response can be a hook. Some hooks are better than others, and being kidnapped is kind of stupid as a hook. I admit it, I am a hack writer. This scenario has a lot of cool stuff, but kind of requires that I abduct the players forcefully. It sucks because there's no freedom. With most hooks, you get to choose if your character cares or not. Ideally, they do care. If they don't, then probably you or the Game Master has made some kind of mistake. But sometimes your character doesn't care, and it's not a mistake. Or maybe they're opposed to the hook. Maybe they have some hesitation, and there's character development as they talk to the other party members about what to do and learn more about the situation. That's fine. That's cool. It's less cool if the party gets kidnapped and made to participate in some kind of weird plot. This gives less agency. Now, I could talk forever about player freedom of choice, but I'm going to skip ahead a little bit and talk about why we give players freedom. We give players freedom so that we can be smug. Why are we smug? We are smug when players do stupid shit and bad things happen to them. When the players are sad, we can be happy. But more realistically, there's not as much interest in good things happening in your game if bad things can't happen. When the players try to get into a castle by killing the guards, they get fucked, and then they're mad. What did we do wrong? They might lament. And you can say, well, you tried to kill a bunch of guards, and there were more guards in the castle. You could have snuck in, you could have disguised yourself. You already heard from the tavern keeper that there's a secret passage, and you didn't look for that. And, you know, whatever's in your scenario, and the players can say, oh, yeah, we didn't think about that. That would have been smart. If the players get kidnapped, and then in the process of it, or afterwards, when they're in prison, they die, or something terrible happens to their character, they might say, what did I do wrong? And the answer is, nothing, really. You're just kind of in an unfortunate situation. That can work. It's not like it's not allowed or not possible, but it's not really fun. So I am giving the players freedom here. They can do a combat encounter if they want, but they don't want, and that's great. It's ideal, even, because then we can continue the scenario quickly and get to the more important portions of it. But if they wanted to, they could fight these two characters. They have stats. I can continue the scenario even if they lose. Even if they die. I've made several backup plans, which I can't talk about completely right now without spoiling the entire game, but which I'll discuss more at the end. Now, the thing is, you have to establish with your players that you're the kind of game master who is accounting for all of this. Experienced players, including myself, will often just sit back in a game and say, oh, okay, the game master is forcing something to happen or us to go to a certain place because that's what's in the scenario and there's no game if we don't do it. That doesn't mean that I'm mad or that I'm not having fun. I legitimately want the game to continue and go well for you, the game master, if I'm a player. Unless I hate you, I guess. And that means that I don't want to cause the game to fuck up. I don't want you to have to write something entirely new. And again, that's not necessarily going to be a bad game. But if you want to not do that, because I'm insane and I don't like that, then just a few times you have to give hints. Just say, hey, just so you guys know, you don't have to do this. Or after the scenario is over, say, just so you know, there's other things that could have happened if you hadn't gone along with that. It's not always fun when you have to explain everything as you're going. But if you do that just a couple times, then they'll become aware. They'll pay more attention to everything. They'll become more invested in the plot because they know that they can influence it. And even if you do have to strap them to the rails once or twice, you'll manage to keep their attention through it because they won't be sure if they're on a rail or not. Now, I've been talking for way too long about this. I can discuss more of it later. For now, let's see what happens with our second group. Crazy day. Students, can we get some introductions? Let's see, top down. Charlie, can you please introduce your student?
My student is Piety Duncan. She's a student of parapsychology at George Washington University. Go Colonials.
All right, great. Fritter, can you please introduce your student?
My student is Charles Springer from Minnesota, now studying at George Washington University, and his education was interrupted by a brief stint for World War I, but he's back, baby.
Who's next on the list? Oh, it's me.
Next is you, yes.
My character's name is Amanda Sharp. She is studying history at George Washington University, We are down in the boonies with our good friend, the history teacher.
That is correct.
The boonies being South Carolina.
Lights, what about
cut
you?
That. Cut that out. I am William Whittlebone, a student of journalism at Salem, or sorry, the Academy of Salem, as it's called right now.
No, that's wrong. You're from Salem.
I am from Salem.
You study at DC.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You
whatever.
Must. It is I required.
I must. I'm sorry. I study at whatever. I'm compelled. Yeah.
Okay, fine. Just introduce your character a little more, maybe.
I am here to start writing hot new journalism about the up-and-coming rich people. We're gonna inventing gossip in the 1920s. It's going to be great.
Incredible. So, the university student hook is that you're taking a history class, and there is a notoriously easy professor, as long as you help her study whatever stupid shit she wants to study. Her name is Professor Katie Magpie, and currently she's fixated on stuff, and she can't really make up her mind.
Truly a tale as old as
can't mine. Really make up her mind on if she wants to write about the Civil War or like early America, or she wants to do something with the history of South Carolina here. And as long as you guys help her out, she's going to give you a straight A. Easy. It's so easy. So that's why you're all down here at a cheap hotel in Mount Pleasant. And today, she has an errand for you. She usually does. She wants you to go to some place and take some pictures. I think one of you has a camera, don't you? Or is she loaning you
one?
Me! All right, you have a camera. Very good. Today, she has a very interesting request. She says, there is someone who is selling some items, some historical items. I don't want to buy them because they're expensive. But I'd like you to go in and say that you want to buy them and get some pictures of them. I already asked if we could take pictures and they said no. So, you know, just get in there and get a few pictures and just say, you know, we'll get back to you later.
Of course, Professor.
Quick, get it out. Got it.
All right. So
Professor.
What are the things, Professor?
What are the things?
Yes.
They are a bunch of Civil War relics from the Civil War, she says.
I guess.
Are any of them haunted?
No.
Any of them stolen from Indian burial grounds?
Probably.
Excellent.
It's not stealing.
Can I get a list, I say, pulling out my notepad?
Not stealing, it's archaeology. If you just leave something in the ground, you relinquish the rights to it.
In point of order, the
spirits that possess such things often view it as theft.
There are.
I roll my eyes so hard that they disappear into the back of my head and they roll out my mouth like fucking gumballs.
There are some cavalry sabers. There are some rifles. There are some pistols. There are some uniforms. And there is a horse saddle. Anyways.
That don't sound like Indian artifacts.
She pats you on the head and says, don't worry about it. Anyways, you get out to this place. It's on a little, really shitty piece of marshy land. Just incredibly shitty. Whose rides are you taking?
I got a car.
I don't have a ride.
I mean,
who's got a fancier car?
I have a car.
Oh, how expensive is your car? Cars. I've got the cheapest car. That's not a motorcycle.
Hold my on. Car is $750, thereabouts.
Oh, mine's way more expensive. Hold on, let me see if I can find its exact cost. Again.
I mean,
we don't need to know the exact cost of your car. I think
petrol is fucking cheap.
Are you all riding
it's 1925.
Kyle's car?
Are we all riding it? It is. It can seem.
Well, one vehicle does seem more efficient.
We need to pretend that we're rich, so getting the fanciest car.
I'm gonna be driving my own car. Thank you.
Okay.
Do we have to pretend?
Shotgun.
Well, you drive in two cars. Kyle's and Fritter's. That's fine.
Where did the term shotgun start? That's not period appropriate.
Shotguns.
No way. Shotguns it's
that's stagecoach from like, stagecoach era. That
really?
Is
yeah, that's stagecoaches.
Stagecoach? Holy shit.
Yeah, that the guy who riding holds the shotgun on a stagecoach meant you were the shotgun.
Oh my god. That makes so much sense.
Crazy. We're today, learning so much. It's
play
great.
The more you know jingle. Put it right in here, right now.
Can I do that? Is that allowed? Is that copywritten or anything?
Literal history student here in the campaign.
It's okay if you like hum it yourself.
Charles is very excited about this.
That's George Washington. You're going to even have a history major.
What if I play it like backwards?
Maybe they do. Who knows? Maybe.
You arrive. This is a big fucking house. It's also super old. you head up, and what would you like to do? You want to knock? Knock and okay?
Yeah, watch right up there.
All right, let's go. Do you have anything particularly large or interesting with you, by the way?
Not...
Well, I suppose I guess a briefcase, but I probably left it in the car.
What does a Kodiak camera look like in the 1920s?
A brown box, for the most part.
I'm definitely bringing my briefcase in.
Hold on, it's called...
It's not huge. It's not huge, but it's not...
No,
tiny.
Yeah, I know, because it's the first one that isn't...
Well, hold on, do you have a flash for your camera? Because if we're shooting indoors, we're going to need a flash.
Yeah, probably. I don't know, it's fine. I'm not too worried, I just want to have a general idea of what you guys look like here. And
carrying an elephant gun.
No, you're not. You guys are pretty well dressed young students in general. Are any of you older students?
I think we're all 20.
Exactly 20, because there are stat benefits for being exactly 20.
I am 28.
Okay.
22.
Listen, I couldn't afford to take -5 to strength.
You knock upon the door.
I was in the war!
There's no response at first. Would you like to knock again?
Yes.
Yes, louder.
All right. You knock again, and the door opens after a few seconds. And at first, this person's face is, like, not happy to see you at all. But then when he sees who you are, he's just immediately confused. He is pretty fancy-looking guy. He's got, like, a red sort of coat vest type of thing going on with some white ruffles under it. It looks very nice. Some sleek pants and shoes. Much nicer than this house looks. He's got some short blonde hair, and he says, "Who are you?"
I push forward past the other two.
Okay. Other three.
Oh. Other three. How many of us are there? Four of us total.
If there's one of you and three of them, then there's four of you.
I push past him and say, "Hello, we're purchasing agents. We're here to look at some antiques that were for sale."
He looks into his eyes sort of roll up like he's thinking about it, and then, like, he seems shocked and exasperated, and he said, "Oh my god, the notice is still up."
Sure is.
Oh dear, are the antiques no longer available?
No, yes, they're available. He's searching for the right words. We were not expecting guests. That's fine. That's fine. Come in. He opens the door wider and steps back and greets you into a quite large. It looks kind of like a hunting lodge in here, but there's staircases going up, and a bunch of doors. And there's animal heads and large chairs and tables and all kinds of stuff. You don't see any artifacts, except you see some sabers over the fireplace. Those might be the cavalry sabers. Oh, Bees, you're making a guess? You're making a call? All right,
yeah,
go ahead.
I'm making a
Say
call.
It out loud. Say it out loud.
Oh, okay. This man has short blonde hair. Raymond has long blonde hair. He's selling fucking artifacts. This is the same guy from...
Interesting. All right. That's a good fan theory. We'll mark that down. You also see that there's a man who looks remarkably similar to this guy, but not like spooky similar, just like very face and hair and...
Familial resemblance, got it.
Yeah, but even his outfit is like very similar. Who is sitting in one of the chairs... he looks like he's doing something, but you're not quite sure what. So the first man leads you in, and he says, "My name is William. You can call me William. Please do not call me Will or Bill."
Okay, William.
"Well, it is certainly my pleasure to meet you, William."
"Thank you. And who are all of you, exactly?" He says, and he gestures in general.
"Oh, I'm also William."
"My name is Charles. We are working for a collector out in Minnesota, and he's sent us with some cameras and some equipment to make sure that these pieces would actually fit in his collection. He accepts only the finest."
"Pleased to meet you all. Photos." He's thinking hard about this, and he says, "Photographs are allowed. Please don't photograph myself or any of the other people living here, but you can photograph the items."
"Of course. We're only the most professional." And
good.
"The only interest here is, of course, in the end."
Excellent.
While they're doing that, do you have the records of provenance?
Sorry?
you know, the records of provenance, showing like where it was found, who found it, the like the bills of lading as it was transported, you know, all the things you need to get a good
history of ownership.
Chain of, yes, exactly that.
Yes, I don't have that, but I'm not the one who's doing the selling, sorry. It's one of the other people who lives here. I will have to go get them. I'm afraid they're a little busy at the moment, but it's no worry. Just, wait here for a moment.
Very well. I'll go get my typewriter. I'm going out to get my typewriter from the car so I can type this all out.
He turns to the other man and says, Peter, could you please just watch our guests and, you know, make sure that everything's fine? And the other man doesn't say anything for a moment, and he flips his thumb, and you realize that he's, like, reading an imaginary book, and he says, I can't, I'm reading.
You know, sorry, I didn't want to interrupt your description, but you're getting a typewriter for this? Just use a pen and paper like a normal individual, dude.
You're gone.
It's too late, I guess. He already went out
it's
the door.
It's too late.
He's gone.
he broke out into a dead sprint.
So this is a group home of some sort?
Yes, I will be back. Peter, don't make me have this conversation right now again, he says. And he heads to one of the doors, and he turns to look back at all of you, and he says, just wait here. It's fine. Just wait.
I would like to lean in to Piety and just say, let's not ask personal questions.
And he heads
out
through
the
door.
Just want the photos, and then we
How
leave.
How quickly did you get your typewriter?
Very quickly, I guess.
Pretty quick, you know. It was just in the trunk of my
very
car.
Very quickly.
So, the four of you are...
How long does it take you to get something out of your car?
Standing
are
here.
You elderly?
In the...
You slept. You came back in the span of a sentence.
Main room. And this man, who is Peter, apparently, is sitting on a chair. He seems quite preoccupied, and there's lots of
so
places
So what are you reading?
Could... You know, I genuinely don't have a response to that, he says, as he looks up at you for a moment. And he thinks,
you guys are a bunch
says,
of strange fellas, aren't you?
Please don't.
Yes, he says. I guess...
Don't antagonize them.
I'm just being friendly.
I'm just trying to hiss this at my compatriots.
Oh, you don't want him to hear that?
No, I know. I'm just okay. Like, I'm trying to basically just fucking nudge and kick them into not being
They're
weird.
Being weird!
He's reading an invisible book. How can you not be curious?
He closes the invisible book. There is not any noise as the book closes.
I was about to ask, does it make a sound?
And he makes a gesture as if he's putting it down on the table next to him, and he says, I'm sorry, I'm being rude again. My brother is right. Do you need drinks or something? He doesn't seem like he's good at this, but he's trying.
Oh, no,
what have you got to offer? Oh, okay.
We have water and a lot of liquor, I think.
Bring the most expensive one.
He just kind of shrugs and says, all right. And he gets up and he heads out through a different door. One more note for this first episode. Part 2 of what I was talking about earlier. But don't worry, this one is quick. There's a few parts in this scenario, one of which is right now, where I'm going to leave the players alone. Everyone has left the room. If they want to, they could just start exploring, opening doors, doing anything that they desire. This could be really devastating, because if they walk into the wrong room at the wrong time, a bunch of stuff might get spoiled immediately. But sometimes that can be fun. This is sort of the danger that comes with player freedom. And the nice thing about having a bunch of doors in a crazy mansion is if I really, really need to, I can say, yes, you open this door? Well, it leads to this room. Even if I didn't really plan that before. Honestly, I didn't so much as draw a map of this mansion so much as made a big list of the rooms that there are, what floor they're on, and that's pretty much it. So unless people are following a route that's already been established, I mostly just kind of let people go into what rooms seem convenient at the time. Sometimes I might regard something like this as cheating, but I don't really think it's cheating in this case, because there's no specific win-the-game rooms or lose-the-game rooms, nor is there really any particular hint as to which rooms might be interesting before you actually get into them, with a few exceptions. Plus, the feeling that I want to go for is a large house that you can get lost in, which it won't really feel like if I give the players a map. You know, actually, I was going to end this note right here, but now that I think about it, the players will probably listen to this episode the week after it comes out, and we won't be finishing our game until next Friday. I'm allowing them to listen as we go if they want to, because unlike Paranoia, they don't really have any secrets that need to be kept from each other, at least not in this particular scenario. So if you are one of the players, let me say one more thing. I hope you don't feel spoiled by this. I don't really think it's a spoiler, but I suppose it might make you more hyper-aware of the way that I've arranged the game and the fact that there is not a specific map of the house. If you don't like it, that's tough titties, because we've already covered pretty much the entire thing, unlike the audience, who has only seen one room at this point. You can ask me some hyper-specific questions about the geometry of the building, or which rooms connect fastest on which routes to which other rooms. But if you do, I'll just kill off your character.
I glare at William.
These people...
Extreme hatred in my eyes.
These people clearly, like, don't have guests over very often, so, you know, you gotta take your shot.
Not every day you get fancy liquor.
Now that the room is empty, what is in this room?
That's a great question. That's what I'm about to do, too.
Well, I already gave a description. Do you need me to give it again, or do you want to do a more thorough inspection?
Well, I mean...
We're doing it.
I was gonna... Yeah. What can we...
You can make a spot hidden if you want to search for, like, secret stuff. If you want to look at the sabers more closely, you could make a appraisal. You can photograph stuff if you want.
Can I take, like, a history roll on any of this to...
Sure, actually, yeah, you could do a history roll. Comes from. You could do a history roll looking around the room. And, of course, you're free to just walk through some other doors if you want to.
Let's see if I remember how to use...
Let's try a spot hidden. I didn't see anything.
Okay.
You do not spot any hiddens. I'm sorry.
I get up, I get back down.
Yeah, that's a pass. I've got a 75.
You take a look. Pretty much everything here looks decently old, honestly, but the most interesting thing in this room is clearly the sabers above the fireplace. You step up and you look at them. They look like they are probably authentic. You would be surprised if these were forgery or, like, replicas or something. They seem to have all of the right design choices. The metal seems to be about the right age. It looks like someone's been taking pretty good care of them, but maybe not all the time.
I look back at my companions and just nod approvingly.
All right, they get the nod of approval. Charlie and...
I would also be looking at the sabers, since
yes,
they're the most interesting
here. I was just asking, is there any, what would you like to roll? Sorry, is what I meant.
I pull out a strange device. It's a piece of metal hooked to some wires, and I pass it over the sabers.
So be it.
Arden? Sorry, what are you doing? What is that?
I'm just raising my eyebrows.
Testing for etheric energies, of course.
Eyebrows rocketing up my forehead.
Okay, I'm going to be the first person to say this.
You better put that audible sigh in there.
I'm going to be the first person to say this. So whatever you think is real is not real.
What did you find?
I roll a 76, which is a failure of a cult.
That's unfortunate. You don't... You know, maybe you do, actually. Maybe you do get some ethereal energies. did you roll something? Would you like to make a roll while you're in this room?
None of my skills are particularly relevant.
Okay, that's fine.
You know what, actually, can I roll psychology to see if these guys are just really weird or if there's something, you know, concerning about them?
You can do that, but it'll be hard to do that without asking them a specific question and gauging their reaction. So you'll need to make
fair.
A hard success.
Okay, that's...
You need to go for it. There's no reason not to.
I guess, okay, sure.
There's some sort of field around these.
Very interesting.
No, I think we're in the suburbs. I don't think there's a field around here.
No, that is not a success.
You have no fucking clue what's going on.
It's very faint, but I think I'm detecting an etheric signature.
You're so distracted by this shit that's going on with Petey that you're like, man, we are the weird ones that you just think to yourself. Thank you so much for listening to the first episode of Phantasms, Flee the Deadly Cthulhu. There's much more for me to talk about, but I'm going to try to break that up into smaller chunks. For now, I will see you next time.